cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to it. It is the GCS. I'm not alone. It's MKT. Yeah. It's myself, Lebang. Gareth is in the middle of the garden route today. Lucky him. Lebang, you been there?
Right.
You've been to the garden?
I think I've probably driven along the garden route like when I was a kid, but in my adult life, no, I don't remember it, but I remember it being like pretty, like very beautiful.
Yeah, no, it is just that. I came back from the garden route, so Gareth and I went either way over the weekend. And yeah, I'd be very interested to see what it's like for Gareth, you know, knowing how he likes to be in his own space. He's not really into the whole nature thing. That's not really his vibe. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see, because people move very different down there as well. So it'll be a super interesting way for.
I was actually thinking, like, chances are he's gonna go there and have some weird like life epiphany, and he just changes his mind and he suddenly likes it. It really can do that to you, like, nature and stuff. Just changes your mind. Suddenly you want to come back and have kids, you want to get married and start a business. It's like a refresher in a way.
Yeah. I'm not sure with him, but I totally agree with you. I think it is exactly that. We'll have to get it back from, obviously, tourism opening it up, and that part of the world, probably the most special part of the country that we've got. And wow, I'm super happy why he's down there. I think it's time to open up the economy and get things going, quite frankly. You know, the UK is back. People are flying here now. They're terrible weather. They want to get away from that. So that's a good thing. I mean, people, I don't know if you've noticed tourists coming in, but I saw a few on the weekend as well. Oh, it looks like we've lost Lebang, but she'll be back now. So good morning to everybody who's with us. I hope you are having the morning of a lifetime. I hope you're having the morning of a lifetime. And something I want to talk about today is the fact that we've got a really, really cool guest. There's a changing time upon us, right? We've got kids that are kind of being raised by the internet, and that is that's an extremely difficult thing if you're a parent. I think it's an incredibly difficult wait for you. Dr. Ken Resnick will be joining us. And if you are a parent, please make sure you are with us after 7. Hey, let me tell you something. Lebang is going through the South Africanism of being in South Africa. I think she might be having some issues with load shedding, you know. Hey, that's tough. And hopefully it isn't just me the whole show. We'll see who we can bring on. Maybe we can bring on an emergency sub. Maybe Simpiwe will join me in a sec. So wherever you are in the country, it's an absolute pleasure, and I hope things go well for you this morning. I want to start off by telling you something that happened in my life yesterday, and perhaps for you it's an experience you can share. Perhaps not. Perhaps you're thinking to yourself, you can go straight to hell. This doesn't happen to everyone. But I have a guy who I work with. Obviously, I work as a part of the Cliff Central core team, and I work more on the sports content exclusively, and of course, I have the privilege of being on the GCS every single day. But I have this guy called James Ildley, so who's my producer for the MKT show. And so the way I kind of live my life out, I think a lot of people, and I've had a couple of messages which have been very interesting. You know, the way I kind of live my life is you got to take responsibility for your personal space. And for me, the personal space begins with the physical, right? And a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago, I noticed this James guy sort of getting into some healthier eating. And a lot of people on my show saying I'm body shaming him and I'm bullying him, which may or may not be true. Who am I to say? If you're a bully, you never know, you're the bully. So I was kind of saying to James, so what's happening with this new eating style and this new eating pattern? And he's kind of like, I want to do this, that, the other. And I'd recently taken on a new physiologist as my trainer. And James joined me. And then James said these magical words. He said, I really, really want to change my life. And I said, okay, what does that mean? And he said, yeah, I just want to get back in shape. So essentially, I put it out there to him was that I will pay for 12 sessions with a physiologist, And James said, okay, great, I'll do it. But I said, there are conditions. James, you're gonna do the 12 sessions. That's Simpiwe, by the way. She's joined us. Morning to you, Simpiwe.
Morning.
How's it going? Yeah, very good. Very, very good. What's news?
Awesome. Nothing much. I just changed my hair color. But you're talking about James and getting fit, and shout out to him.
Shout out to James, indeed. I was just explaining the whole thing. And I was actually thinking about it last night as I was chatting to some people about it, was that it's interesting that it came from him, because before I've been quite puritanical to go to people and say, hey, get it together. And more over the last sort of 2 years, I'm just like, okay, well, whatever. You're doing what you're doing. I must just get on with what I'm doing. And if you like it, cool. If you don't, I need to be okay with that. And I lean more into my principles. I just presume everyone's doing what they want to do. So if you're unhealthy, good for you, is how I roll now. Like, if you want to be overweight and unhealthy, good for you. All the best. That's fine. It's got nothing to do with me. I've got my own problems. But with James, it's an interesting one. So I said, I'll pay for his sessions. All right. But if he misses a single session, he has to pay me back for every single session, and he's committed to it. And then not only that, by the way, James, I don't think has ever run 5 kilometers in a row in his life. He also committed to running a half marathon, which I bullied him into on the show. So it was a very interesting thing for me that he's willing to do it after a rough lockdown. And I mean, he won't mind me saying this, but he's picked up, I heard yesterday, 20 kilograms. Which absolutely shocked me in lockdown. Like, I've never, and it's so difficult for me to know, and I'd love to know what people think, is I've never spent a day of my life out of shape, so I don't know what that feels like. And I was trying to think last night, what does that feel like? Like, to go from what you were to what he is now. 20 kilograms. It's insane to
me. That's a lot.
It's too much.
I will say, like, lockdown was actually the best thing that ever happened to me, because I started getting fit and I started having like a proper routine, and now coming to office I feel like I'm slacking. So for me it's like the opposite. I lost weight. I was like in the best shape of my life during the hardcore lockdown. So hearing that people were like adding weight and gaining weight, it's like, yo, dude, like, you had time. For me, it was like, I could wake up at 8 o'clock and go for a run or skip. Or that's what I did. I did like 1,000 skips a day. And that was really cool. Like, so for me, it was like, yeah, I have time to do the things that I want to do. And now that I'm back in the office, it's like, oh, you can't really do X, Y, Z. So yeah, shout out to him for committing. That's, yeah, it's hectic. And then you know how much he's going to have to pay you if he, you know, misses a session or the sessions.
You see, the thing about James is he wears his heart on his sleeve. And the thing is, so I think he thought, when I say my trainer, he thought it's just one of those gym boots, you know. Whereas I, like, the guy I work with is a proper scientist, and he costs a little more than your boot at the gym. You don't just pay him a once or $500 fee. So he didn't know, and then the number was revealed to him. The guy Brad Phillips is on my show every single day, and James realized that actually it's a small fortune for 12 training sessions with a physiologist. So it is going to be very interesting for him should he miss a session. And it's 12 sessions. Listen, if you've never trained before properly, training 3 times a week is not a joke, right?
No, it is.
It's expensive.
And also it's hard. Like, training's hard. I don't mean to sound sanctimonious or I'm better than the world. It's like, the reason I also stopped going to people and, hey, improve your life or whatever, is actually it's hard. You know, it's not even about the training. Is discipline's a really hard thing if you're not into it. And, hey, James starts this morning. He was at the gym at 5:15, and it's all begun. And look out for the vlog. And if you haven't listened yet, the MKT show is available as a podcast. Myself and James did a really heartfelt hour that's an extra. And you can hear what James, and he revealed some extremely interesting things. And he revealed some things about me, which I didn't realize I had deeply rooted in me in terms of my biases, that came out in a very, very interesting way. So I'm really interested for people to hear what James has to say and how polar opposite James and I live our lives. It's a very, very interesting thing. So look out for that later today. Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've seen the really soft side of you. I was saying Lebong this morning, Mr. Iron Fist Mbulelo is ready. And now it's like hearing you speak about this, it's like, oh, Gandhi, you do have a heart somewhere. I don't know where, but like, it's there. And you can actually do like random acts of kindness. You can actually, you know, do something nice for the next person. And shout out to you, Mbulelo. I'm very like, wow, I'm shooketh to the core. But wow, because you actually invested. No, he said a lot of things that I'm just like, who hurt you? Like, I feel like someone has hurt Mbulelo. And now hearing this, it's like, oh wow, you can actually do a really good deed for somebody and be invested, you know, in something that is not you.
Like, him-centered. No, I feel you. But you guys are making progress. Tell me how you feel. That's sweet, man.
Yeah.
It's good that you can tell Mbulelo how you really feel. I mean, you know, because how many people aren't?
No, I tell him all the time. I think he knows where I stand, like with the fact that I think he doesn't have a heart, and I think he's very hardcore. You know, and like moments like this, I'm like in awe. I'm like, wow, shout out to you. Like, shout out to James for committing, but shout out to you for actually, because I've seen how you've been on James' case about other things, and now that you're committing to his fitness on this level with your money, because you know, you and your money is very tasty linked. So you committing with your money, shucks, dude. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see how James is gonna do. If anything, like that's gonna be like the real.
He's gonna be hot boy. What? Summer bodies already.
There's the physical aspects where it's like, oh James, yeah, ooh. But then there's gonna be like the internal stuff that obviously he's gonna be tested and he's gonna be pushed every time he does this. And as you said earlier, you know, that discipline of having to wake up, all of that jazz. I think it's gonna really be good for him. And whoever James comes out as on the other side of this, yeah, kudos.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy, and you know, is people need help. Like we all need help. I don't know if there's these perfect people out there who think that they can do it all themselves. And you know, I come from a home where it's one of our ethos in my family is no man is an island. And when I ignored that, things went horribly awry for me for about a decade. Until you come back and realize no man is an island. And everybody gets lost, you know. I don't think that's a very preachy thing to say, is especially lockdown. Like, lockdown's been hard for so many people, you know, for so many people. And, you know, without community, I think, I do think we're all dead. And it's incredibly inspirational, actually, to see James take it on. And it's not really about the outcome, you know. Everybody gets kind of caught up, and I don't know what it's like for you guys starting something new, especially like this. I mean, it's all iron. It's one fraction of life that I've managed to get half decent at, is the sort of discipline and physical aspect side. It's like everybody gets caught up in the outcomes, and it was revealed to me how opposite we are to James as well. Is he's very outcome based, whereas I'm only process based, and you know, if you help people change their processes, I think most of the time the outcomes are going to be half decent. So, and if it comes from them, you know, for me, I'm not invested in people. I'll tell you a quick story that'll kind of give you an insight into a big part of why I live my life. My dad was driving me to a football game once, and we lost the game. And he asked me, "So how'd it go? How do you feel about the loss?" And I said, "Eh, you know." And he pulled the car over to the side. Now, my dad's a busy guy. He was, like, working 24/7. And he said, no. If you're not invested, right, I'm not invested. So how do you feel about the loss? And I understand what he was doing is, I mean, I was like 10 years old, but if I'm not invested, why should he be? Because he's got other stuff to do. And I try and live my life that way. If you're not invested, my time's precious to me. And so for someone like James, who's a fantastic young guy, who's just gotten a little bit lost, is he's invested. Of course I'm in. You know, I don't have time to waste either.
Yeah.
So Well, let's see how it goes, hey? Let's see how it goes.
I'm really glad you mentioned that story about your dad, and I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the whole idea of no man is an island, all of that jazz, because we're chatting to Dr. Ken Resnick a bit later, and he's like, you know, he knows everything about raising kids. He knows everything about the responsibilities that adults need to take when it comes to raising kids. So he's going to come a bit later. And I actually would be interested to see, you know, if you'd be willing to open up to him, Mbulelo, about some of the things that you experienced as a young man growing up. And really how those, maybe those 10 years that, you know, got taken away from you, in essence, how you got there. Because he's like, he's on top of it. I've been reading his book, Parenting Decoded, and I'm sitting here like taking notes every 2 minutes. Like, you're right. A lot of the stuff that he says is scary, but it's facts. Because we're just living in a time where we're cushioning up our kids so much. And I don't think you were necessarily cushioned up, Mbulelo. That's why you are the way you are. You're a strong young man, iron fist team, you know. So when Dr. Ken comes on, please do chat to him. It's like a free freaking session for us, bro. Like, let's get real with him.
Yeah, but Lebang, and that's something also I kind of realized in the before Dr. Resnick joins us. It would be interesting because I recently found out that you've got your own indoor soccer team with a goalkeeper. You know, I didn't realize that you had five kids, and I was completely stunned by that. Partly because I'm not a good listener. No. I was completely, as Simpiwe and her generation are saying, shooketh right to the core. Like four.
Her generation.
Wow.
So I've got four kids. Yes, Catherine. Do you remember we had Catherine on the show? I think it was like 3 weeks back.
Yes. Yeah.
She's one of Gareth's mates. She's coming back today as well. So she's got five. I've got four. So we have like nine kids in
the
background.
That's a whole soccer team. That's a whole team.
With a coach.
It definitely is. With a coach. Jeez. With a coach. So
you guys pull up a taxi. Like,
Quanta.
I just want to know who's going to be sitting in the front counting money, because it's not going to be me.
Speaking of which. Oh my gosh! Okay, counting money. I don't know if you guys have come across this. And on the weekend, I met an incredible guy, and you know, as I was working in Tsitsikamma, I met this absolutely incredible human called Ian. And Ian, like a phenomenal personality, but he told me. Because right now, myself and South African football, so PSL, I don't watch it. We just on a sabbatical. We haven't divorced. We're just taking some time off to let each other grow. But he told me about a lady who owns a club called Royal AM. Her name is, I understand, Sean Mkize. I don't know if you've heard about this lady.
Hi, Mam Kize.
Oh,
so wow. Now,
our mother, you don't know all of our mom.
She has a reality show. Mam Kize.
Wow.
Like the most balling woman in South Africa.
Incredible. Okay, so you've heard of her, but
I don't.
Go ahead, Simpiwe.
Okay, no, carry on. No, because mine is like left. Mine
she's
is like
a real thing.
Yeah.
She is, and even her family is on another level.
So, that she actually gifted to her son.
Okay, well, I want to tell you the story.
I think.
Yeah, let me tell you the story, and you guys can let me know how you feel. So, because in my mind, I always think systems, and I'm like Premier League, NFL, you know, it's professional. That's what it looks like, Formula One. And I understand that she came on the field after her players won with cold, hard cash and was just distributing it on TV. Like, and that offends every part of me, you know. But then I thought, no, wait. This is not Europe. Like, this is what we do as South Africans. We don't roll like that. And I was stunned. But then Ian went on to tell me something which literally blew my mind. He said when her players were losing one of the games recently, she stood up in the director's box and flashed money from the director's box. Like, and I thought to myself, my God, who is this woman? So maybe you guys can tell us who Sean Mkize is and what is going on there.
Okay, so all I know is
you can
that,
go, Levan.
Yeah, so she was previously married to a very, very successful South African man. I think he was involved in Boma government. Boma, like, I don't want to say things that are incorrect, but look, there's a lot of money there. A lot, lots. Like, let's fly to Cape Town for lunch kind of money. Let's go to Paris for shopping kind of money. And so that marriage didn't last. So she's got two kids. And her son is just like a typical KZN boy who's just got so much money. It's very, very spoiled. He tried out for the soccer team and he didn't get in. So his mom said, you know what? I'll buy it. And that's exactly what she did. So yes, that's basically it. Like, that's she's literally that mother. She does everything for her kids. It doesn't matter what they want. She does it for them. And the day that that soccer match happened, after the game, she went down. They were holding a brown paper bag, you know, like in the movies. She took out like 200 stacks, like I'm sure it was like 10,000 rand, just like boom, cash, and just started giving it out to the players. And from a I guess a politically correct perspective in terms of football, what are you doing? How unethical? How dare she? She's shaming the name of. Look, in South Africa, that's cool. You know, that's how we appreciate each other. That's how we praise each other. We give each other money as a sign of, like, it's love. It's a love language, if I can say. I mean, it's easier for them because they've got a lot of money. But I completely get why a lot of people were against it, because it's, you know, it's unethical. It makes the game look a certain way. And a lot of people had a lot of feels about her coming onto the pitch and actually giving the players money. Some of the players themselves were caught saying, she better not come here and just hand out that money, you know? So it was quite controversial, but it happened. It's a vibe. Like, her and her whole family are just a vibe. If you know what a vibe is, then you know what I'm talking about.
Incredible.
Yeah, and she has a whole reality show. That's how I got to know of Umamkize. She has a whole reality show. And in one of the episodes, they showed us that she owns a soccer team and she's there to the guys. And you know, locker room chat to motivate the boys. You need to win. You need to do this. You need to. The motivation is, if you guys win, you guys will get 1 million rand. Done.
What?
That was the motivation. Not strategy. You go see, you must attack. Hey, 4-4-3 formation, 2-2-1 formation. No. Chief. She was like, y'all win, 1 million bucks.
Wait.
Y'all lose, get nothing.
Is she in the change room?
You guys get nothing.
Is she in the...
Yeah, I mean, she owns, and then she left team. Afterwards, but she owns the soccer team. She literally walked in. There is a coach. And she just walked in to say, and I don't know what even the coach was saying, I won't lie, but she literally walked in on some, here's motivation. You want to win, you guys will get 1 million rand. If you lose, you guys get nothing. And she was out. Like, that's all you need. If you're not going to get money, I chief care.
Mbulele, I'll tell you off the bat, you would not like her. Don't waste your time even watching one episode.
No, you wouldn't
like her.
Yes.
She's very, like, verbose and flamboyant. And honestly, she's just living her best life. She is just living her best life with all this money, and she just loves her kids. And whatever her kids want, she gives it to them. You would not like her.
So I've got.
And this is a picture of her.
Sweet.
This is Mamkize, for those that that don't know her.
Mother. She is a beautiful lady. She looks like a beautiful lady. And yeah, hey,
of course
no.
She's beautiful. She has money. There's. I always say there's no ugly millionaire. There's no ugly billionaire. She's gorgeous.
No, I feel you. And. You know, what you've just told me offends me on so many levels, but particularly as a sportsman. And look, I played pro football. The one place where you don't want ownership is the locker room, right? Because the only place sportsmen feel safe is the locker room, because the pressure. Mm-hmm. Let me just tell you, and I played only to the under 21 level at the pro level, is that the only place sportsmen feel safe in the world, not home, not the streets, not... It's the locker room. Once owners and management and people like that enter that, but anyway, again, I'm thinking, you know, my whole football experience was always through something called the school of excellence, and then it was European. You know, I never played professional football in South Africa. So again, Mamkize, absolutely incredible with her mini skirts at the game as well as the CEO. I absolutely
love her.
Love her.
So Ntoko also has a comment. I don't know if you can pull it up there, Bulelo. He says, no, it's not cool. In the South African context too, we'd like to view the PSL as a professional institution, and that behavior was just appalling. So do you see what I mean? There were like different views and different feelings about this whole thing that happened. On the ground level, I'm like, this is cool. As a viewer, I think it's fine. But as somebody who's really, I guess, invested in football and the PSL as a concept, it's appalling.
You know what?
I think looking at her background, right? Because I've watched a few episodes as well. She's quite... rural. Because when the show first started, yeah, see, Black Twitter had her on her style. They're like, what is she wearing? Like, this lady has all this money, and she don't know if she's coming or going. And if you look at her now, her style has changed, and I'm telling you, she looks like an A-lister. She can give Bonanga a run for her money when it comes to her wardrobe now. And a lot about how she moves and does things has changed based off how people have, like, really given it to her. The Black Twitter, like, Black Twitter attacked her to be like, yeah, sure, you have money, but you're not doing it properly. And another thing is that, I don't know, so she has a son, eh? If I could be wrong with the facts, but she has a son, and the son has a girl, and he just recently got the girl pregnant. Did home girl, eh, not walk around like she's pregnant, she's walking, and she's pulling a whole Lamborghini, guys. Like, another
That was her.
That's like, I'm like,
that was her push present, right?
Yes, I think it was a whole Lamborghini, and she's pushing it. Like, guys, I'm like, I'm Nico Ross.
Congratulations for having my baby. Congrats. You know what? You deserve a Lamborghini. I mean.
And also the other businesses that she's in, I think she also does, like, construction a bit and whatnot. It's like, you understand that she's very, like, I don't know, like, she does business, you know, black people business. Like,
I don't know what you mean. Go ahead. Go ahead. Black,
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, go ahead, Simpiwe. What's black people business?
What's black people business?
It's like, you know, let me put it like this. In the suit and tie world, let's rather go like that. There's formalities, there's contracts, there's, you know, you sign X, so then you do Y. With black people, it's more of a, Lebang, I know you. I know your skills. I have 10K. How much do you charge? Okay,
objection.
You can do the job. Stop. And then,
Your Honor.
And then, you know.
Why
you know,
that's not black people business? Simply, where did we get that? Who taught us how to move like that when it comes to business?
I'm just saying. I'm just saying that that's how she would move. And it's like, okay, like, this is not, I wouldn't say not, because it's not necessarily unethical. But, I don't say it's not, but homegirl has a way of moving where you're just like,
Look, listen, you know, everybody thinks Americans are ridiculous, like, because we only live our lives through the lens mostly, and it's the way we're on is through the lens of reality television, right? That is how most of the world is perceiving themselves. It's why people buy stuff. It's why people feel terrible about themselves. Is they're looking at screens. Is if I don't look like that, regardless of whether you're a good person or not, largely what I pick up is I'm not enough. You know, if I don't have Kim Kardashian's bag or whoever, like, I don't know who's hot on the streets right now, is people view themselves as too little. It's interesting how somebody who's rural in Africa has adopted a personality that it obviously wasn't her purely because of the internet. It's such an interesting way, and human beings have never ever lived like this before, you know, is you must remember most people have only ever known their village in the history of mankind. So for large parts of the world until probably the late 19th century, you only knew the village next to you. You couldn't go, like, to travel a village over in a horse, on a horse, was so dangerous. It was so dangerous that we live in these incredible times where being a global citizen has just taken on a new meaning. And she was so interesting to me because of this. It's like, wow, this is incredible behavior. I would expect this from somebody down south in America. But all it shows me is people are people, right? People are people. And I absolutely love it. Lebang, before we get to the headlines, you wanted to get to something which I think is very, very interesting regarding sort of friendships and solving things amongst family. And I wanted to know what you wanted to speak about there, because it does seem quite saucy.
Yeah, no, saucy is the word. So I had a breakthrough this weekend where I actually sat down with my siblings, and we kind of resolved a lot of things that have just been going unsaid for years. So I guess we grew up in a kind of household where we don't often sit down and really discuss what's bothering us, or really unpack how you hurt me, or whatever it is that you said made me feel a certain way. It kind of happens, we brush it under the rug, and we keep it moving. And this is not only in my household per se. Like the typical South African, black South African family treats things in this manner, where it's, if we're going through something, it happens and you keep it moving. So I guess I'm trying to unlearn that, because I don't want my kids to grow up with that thing of, if one of your siblings does something or even one of your parents does something, you kind of just keep it moving. Let's sit down, let's chat, let's solve.
How many siblings do you have? How many siblings in your family?
I've got two siblings. It's me and my two brothers.
So, okay, so you're the only girl. And who's the youngest?
The only girl. My younger brother.
Okay, so you've got a younger brother, so you're the middle child.
Yes, I've got a younger brother and an older brother.
Okay, cool. So
we were able to just sit and just talk and just say, look, I don't like how this happened because blah, blah, blah. I don't like what you did to me here because blah, blah, blah. We kind of sat and focused on solutions. And after that, we just hugged it out. And it's almost as if none of it mattered, because we spend so much time harboring, like, how a person makes you feel. And, yeah, I feel like this because blah, blah, blah. We don't sit and fix. We don't sit and mend, you know. So I did that for the first time in my big adult age. And I've got good hopes. You know, I've really got good hopes for what happens after this, how we treat each other after this. And if something else does happen, how we deal with it now. Do we solve it? Do we sit down as a family and not really have family meetings per se, but also just not ignore it? Like, let's just not ignore it. I think for the first time in a long time, we caught my mother in 4K, like, basically, like, manipulating the crap out of all of us. And shame, not because she's a manipulative person. She's just like a mother. She's trying to keep everyone happy. So she'll say one thing, and then I must feel a certain way about my brother. And then my brother, now we're in a WhatsApp group, and we can all see what's happening. We're like, but, Mom, it doesn't happen like that. So the three of us decided, you know what?
So wait, I have some questions.
Ganged up on the mom.
We didn't gang up, Simpiwe.
It sounds a little bit like that.
you guys were all like, we're not happy. And then also you guys were saying,
sounds a bit.
Look, we're adults now. We're not kids anymore. I'm 31. My brother's 38. My younger brother's 26. You can't, you know, mother us like we're kids now. Now there's a way that you must move. Look at us as adults as well. Understand that we can view things as adults now.
So, on the same page. Hold on. Was the conflict between you guys as a troop and your mum, or between you guys, there were some things? Because I have a sibling, and from my side, there was some stuff, just because I was a terrible human for 10 years. And so now, like, let me ask you the dynamic, which I think everybody can relate to, and perhaps it is the root of some of this stuff. Generally, from people I know with siblings, it is. Was one of your siblings, so you or perhaps them, whoever may have been more successful than the other? Because let me explain a dynamic to people. And I only grew up in a black household, so I can tell you how I know a black household that's conservative looks at things. It's like, if you do things that are viewed as credible, you just get the shine. It's just how it is. There's in more liberal families, which I've been exposed to as white families, is that everybody kind of gets the same thing. If you're into hiking and camping and, you know, crystals, we will try and make space for that. If you're into soccer, we'll take you to practice. If you're into rugby, we'll take you to all of that. Whereas in the black household, are you at university? Are you getting a degree? Are you good at school? Yes. Are you coming to church, etc.? That's who gets the most love. Was there that dynamic in your family? Why was there any – did it have anything to do with that? Or was it more just insecurities?
I would say the latter. Really, it had nothing to do with, you know, who's doing what in their lives, who's achieving more, who's... That's just, like, that's underlying things that are never spoken about. This situation was really quite a light-hearted little thing where my big brother felt a certain way and my mother agreed with him. I felt a certain way, she agreed with me. My younger brother felt a certain way and she agreed with him. So she was not against anyone. She was saying yes to all of us. Why? Just to keep all her kids happy, which is sham. You know, it's as a, I get her. Like, as a mom, at some point, just like, hey, you don't want any drama. You just want there to be peace. And for the sake of peace, I'll say yes to all my kids. And now when we're in this WhatsApp group and the truth is coming out, so I'm like to my big brother, hey, I noticed that, you know, you didn't like ABC. I feel like ABC. And he's like, no. Me and your mom feel that. I'm like, whoa, you and my mom, that's my mom too. And she told me that, you know, and it just became this big realization that mom just says things to make us all happy. And she even said it herself, like, she'd rather not disagree with any of us in hopes to just keep peace. And I said to her, look, thank you for trying that, but it's just not going to work anymore because now we are grown. We are adults now. We can dissect things really into, like, the smallest pieces. So just be honest with us. Just tell us the truth.
Sure.
How did your mom take that?
That's tough.
Not very well.
Of course not.
It's been her bread and butter for years. This is how she has raised us all, just to keep it for the sake of peace. Just say yes to all my kids. None of them must feel like they're wrong. I mean, obviously, there's extreme cases where that differs. But for anything, she would much rather come across as like the, you know, the peacemaker. And now she was confronted with this method because we didn't really appreciate that she wasn't able to be honest with us. We can understand and respect that she, you know, wasn't able to do that. But now it's like, okay, cool, mom. How do we move past this? You're not a bad mother. But, you know, tell us the truth. Girl, we're not going to hate you for being harsh with us, or we're not going to dislike you for maybe saying something we don't like. And I guess she had a lot of, like, internal soul-searching to do, which led to the three of us then sitting and unpacking. So I'm just excited to see if there's going to be any real change after this. Will we, as three grown adults, be able to have conflict and then just resolve it immediately? Or are we going to hop on about it for months and months and not talk and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah? It's a lot. It's a lot. But I'm interested to see if there'll be any difference.
So, Simpiwe, I'd love to hear your dynamic, right? But I want to tell you something that's really interesting that's going on in my life as well, in and around families. And I think it's standard, right? So I'm 35. I'm kind of transitioning from young to old, and I'm doing it very badly. But
well, according to, you know, our government, you're still a youth.
You're still young.
A young lad.
And hey, I'll be the ANC Youth League until I'm like Figilem Balul. Just keep my card till I'm 50 or whatever. But what's always interesting, I've always heard my mentor saying, in life you have to manage up as well. You know, we always think management is just about managing down. But wherever you are in life, is you have to manage the people above you, and you have to manage your colleagues. You know, people always think about management as a sort of top-down thing. And I've recently learned that in family, because after a while, I just decided, you know what, I need to be a grown-up and take some control in my family situation, is that, you know, when our parents transition from provider to being provided for, those dynamics are very difficult for them to deal with as well. It's very difficult to go. And so there's a philosophical theory called the Thucydides trap, right? And in this theory, they say there is always tension when the incumbent power becomes transcended. So there's always a moment of friction when the incumbent power gets transcended by the new power. So as you ascend, your mom, your dad, having enough money, having your own home, little things like paying at a restaurant, you know, power positions, making the family decisions, you know, where are we going? Who's paying for the family holiday now? You know, who's paying for mom's extras, dad's extras? And in those moments, I've realized I have to manage my mom as well, as he transitions from provider to being provided for, because in her words, also there's idle hands that do the devil's work. And when people get bored, they still view us as kids. And you forget that. But just because you can pay taxes now, it doesn't mean you're not a child anymore. And you need to tell them that, because you just presume, you know, I don't know how it is, and I'd love to know what you guys think, is you see yourself as, I'm growing up, everybody can see that. But no, sorry. In order to be understood, actually, you have to do an annoying thing. It's called explaining yourself. You have to explain to your mom that, hey, you wait at the gate now. You no longer just come in at the gate by yourself. You wait at the gate, I'll let you in. But you have to actively do that. And that's hard for the child and the parent, in my experience. So that's a very interesting, and I'm sure every person listening can identify with what you're saying there, Leba.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. We don't really think about how this change is affecting our parents. Maybe that's something we should consider doing a bit more often.
Simpiwe, you got siblings? You got it all going on there?
I have an older sister, and I grew up with my gran. So this is very interesting because my gran is, I don't know about other black folks, but my gran is the type, if we have a sit down, oh, granny, we don't like this, you know, you're getting old. But, and it's like small things even to say, you can't walk to the shops anymore. Like, you're too old to do that. We need to get you an Uber, or I will get the things for you. Like, it's small things like that. My gran will be in the house, yo, nang simpi, I got softening hand, yeah. And then you're like, no, gran, like, no, can I get you an Uber? Then I'm, you know, she doesn't want me to just even see my friend. Like, she's very, like, and you're like, no, but, you know, this is why we're doing it. And she just, even when you confront her and other things, that, hey, why did you spend money on this? Let's spend money on this month. She'll be like, oh, no, but my money. And she doesn't say it directly, like, in that moment. She'll be like, no, I understand. Okay. 3 weeks later, oh no, they don't want me to spend my money the way I want to spend it. Oh, they don't want me to do the things. It's like, ha, ma'am, like, why are you being so shady? Like, no. And that's what I'm currently in, to be like, you can't do certain things because of your age now. I'm not stopping you from living your best life, but this is out of safety. Like, please don't walk to the shops. I'll order the Uber. I'll get it. Like, oh, you want sweets? I will buy them. Don't go to the neighbors and whatnot. I will get them. And then it's also that thing of, like, she doesn't know how much I earn. I did that on purpose because I saw that from my sister when she knew how much she earned, and it was like, that's a problem. And also understanding that, so it's like looking at how she treats my sister, and it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to have to deal with. So I'm going to, you know, protect myself and not let her know how much I earn. But then it's also things of, like, she'll be like, oh, but you can do X, Y, Z. Can't you pay for this? Can't you pay for that? It's like, no, I can't. I've budgeted everything. Like, my life is a budget. So if you want me to do X, Y, Z, please tell me 3 weeks in advance. And she's not with us. She's like, no, but I'm so used to just, you must give me money. You must do that. I was like, no, ma'am, you don't do that. And that's the friction that I'm having with my grand, to say the no. When she hears the no, she's like,
so,
oh, you don't love me. I don't know if you guys have seen that video, that TikTok, where the ladies are like, oh, my man just told me he wants a divorce. And he's like, no, I just said no. and that's what I'm going through now.
So Tracy says, your own parent is one thing. Your mother-in-law is a completely different conversation. And, you know, again, these types of things really appeal to what's at the core for me, because in my personal life, I just love managing things and making things very clear to people. But I'm realizing more and more, hey, we all are all different. And Tracy's made an incredible point here, is that, you know, people get married, or not necessarily, people partner up. And it's something that I think we'll talk about probably in the future. But, you know, when you get married, is you're also marrying another whole family. Like, I always hear people saying, I'm marrying my wife or my husband. No. No. Let me just have a talk with you at the door here, ma'am or sir. Is that you are...
Five.
And you know what?
I'm 20. I'm 30, because it's the uncles, the cousins, huh? It's the long-lost siblings.
Because
the whole village.
Nobody ever tells you the whole story. Like, I don't care how honest people think they are, is nobody ever tells you about their full dynamic. And once you're married, you're in now. And it is one of those things, right? It's like, it's why I like with the very few friends I have, is especially when there's a problem, tell me everything. Because I don't want to find something out down the road. And I find so many couples where people keep finding stuff out. Year three, year four, her mom is this. Oh my God, I didn't know that there was a mental disorder in her family. Like these things are important, right? And as Tracy says, when there's a mother-in-law, a father-in-law, a possessive grandmother on the other side that you didn't know about, the grandmother's religious to a point, you know what I mean? So Tracy is, I mean, preaching it, right?
Yeah, Mbulula, what if I'm also still finding some of this stuff out now as I grow? Like, I'm not going to know every single thing when I meet you. I don't have, like, my life in a book that I can hand to you and say, hi, read this journal and decide if you still want to be with me. Some of these things I'm also still finding out about the mental disorders in my family, about my uncle, whoever. So really, if you want to get with me, you just kind of have to realize that there's things that may or may not come up. And at that point, you must decide if I'm still enough. The end. literally, it just, that's what it boils down to. That's ultimately what a relationship is. You're never gonna know everything. It doesn't work like that. How it does work is, while we're learning this, we're all going through a journey. That's it.
You know what's important before you get married? Take your wife or girlfriend's family on a holiday, I would say at least 10 times. So, like, spend time, go to the rurals with them 10 times, because then I know what I'm in for down the road. It's a huge approach for me.
Can I just object? Objection, Your Honor. Mm. Because I'm Zulu, and my family is Zulu.
Sorry to hear it.
My sister recently got... Australia. What's wrong with you? But my sister recently got married to a vendor man.
Whoa. Stop there. Before we bring Dr. Resnick on, your sister married a vendor man willingly. How vendor? My grandmother was vendor. How vendor are we talking here? Because...
No, like, vendor.
Listen, it's important we give our international listeners some context, right? So, part of my family is from up north, and my grandmother was vendor. So, when we say vendor, they are right up north. It's where the proper juju in South Africa gets done. If you don't know, Shevan Nafela, if you're going to do it properly, you want to go up north. If you want great mangoes, that's where you get it, right? And they have a particularly interesting variation on what the Western world might view as patriarchal behavior within the relationship sphere. Go ahead, Simpiwe. People need that context.
I'd also like to add a Zulu context, right?
Because they're also different.
Well, so there's a song that says, "Oh, I love a Zulu girl." So dating a Zulu girl, yes, that's the best thing you can ever do. I don't know about Zulu man, because the patriarchy there is very real as well. The Zulu culture. And so here they are, two people in love. They want to do the things. And as you said, like, she's been around his family, the mom, a few times. She's gone to vendor a few times in the dating stage. And vice versa. He's hanged out with the cousins, the uncles, and whatnot. So we thought, hey, when he proposed, that this is going to be smooth sailing because we like each other. Yes, there have been one or two conflicts. We solved it. When we're doing the lobola negotiations, that's when we saw that we are very different in how we handle things. That was the first big issue. That no, you guys, and I think also for them, they'd say we came across as uncultured, and we're like, you guys are uncultured because this is rude. Like, what you guys are doing right now, who does that? That is, what's wrong with y'all? And vice versa, they were looking at us and like, And I'll tell you what happened. The whole lobola negotiation happened, and then the day of umshado, basically 3 days before the wedding, one of the grands from the groom side passed on. And with us, umshado, you never postpone it; it carries on. Like, there's a reason why. So we're like, no, we're doing it. It's going to be a bit smaller, intimate, but it has to carry on, and things have been paid. And they're like, no, everything must stop. So that was one of the big clashes right up in the beginning, where we're like, oh, okay, we come across as insensitive, and y'all, we don't understand. Wedding happens, sharp. Now they're in the marriage. Now she's a Mrs. Somebody. And we're seeing all sides, different sides of that vendor family and how she's being treated. And we're like, hold up. You don't treat a person like this. You don't do this. You don't, why are you in her house? This is her house. Why are you just in? And it's like, no, it's my son's house.
It's the man's house, yeah.
He. And it's like, whoa.
No, but...
And now it's like, we're seeing a different... What I'm saying is that we're seeing a different side to the family. And we're like, had we known this 3 years ago, we probably wouldn't have never said, hamba mpumi, and get married.
Well,
now we
hold on. Like, actually, it was always there. You were just romanticizing the thing, because people see what they want to see. And you know what? I'm happy for you because you got what you wanted, because you chose to see the good side only. And now when I say vendor people are different, I know they are in my family. So don't play around, Simpiwe, and you're getting the medicine now. All right, let's get to Dr. Resnick. We'll come back to this, Simpiwe, on the other side, because this is incredible news here. One of the two of the most conservative tribes in South Africa mixing. I love it. It is going to be a highlights package for the rest of your life. All right, let's bring on Dr. Resnick. And I think, Lebang, it's awesome that you're here as well as a parent. And we've got Catherine with us as well. So, Dr. Ken Resnick. Dr. Resnick, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. And Catherine, phenomenal to have you back as well. I've rewatched the last time you were on a couple of times, and I'm still chuckling. So fantastic to have you to have you back. And I mean, with Catherine and Levang here, we've got an entire rugby team with a bomb squad with a bench. Obviously, with Catherine having 15 kids and Levang having 11 herself, we've got a squad that we could win all season. Dr. Resnick, it's You know, I'm sure you were listening as we were speaking before in terms of families and dynamics like that. And obviously with you doing what you do magnificently and your book, which I really look forward to kind of reading, is you've kind of opened up as a psychologist and you've founded sort of the Smart Choice Parenting Program, which you established in 2008. So perhaps you could tell us about what that is and we can start getting into it.
Okay, Dad. So I'll do it as quickly as I can. I think one of our problems today is that we're getting it all wrong. You know, you're pushing putting around kids. So I'd always been interested in parenting and sort of being a psychologist. I came a long way around. It had always puzzled me that what we were doing was taking out the kids, assessing the kids, and leaving the parents out to dry. And it's got worse and worse. And the parents are not being given a clue in terms of what they do. My whole approach, which was based on, from the Pretoria University, which is quite amazing, it helps the parents understand that it's the way we parent that actually influences our kids. It prepares them with the skills to take on life. If you have to look at the Khoisan or even our ancestors, they have one purpose when they take the young out. They're helping them to survive. From an early age, they're teaching them to hunt, how to look after themselves. You're not going to find an ADHD Khoisan child or an oppositional defined Khoisan child or a Khoisan child with an anxiety disorder. So what we've got to really understand is our job, and parents don't know their job. And these days what's happened, we're mollycoddling kids. We're treating kids as though they're going to break in half. Kids are the same kids that were born thousands of years ago. They're tough. Just don't abuse them. Mm-hmm. They can handle a disappointment. What we're doing is we're hopping around their feelings. So what makes my approach different is that it helps parents understand it's the way we parent that creates the issue rather than helping them deal with the child's behavior. Because kids are born, all kids, irrespective of color, waiting, taking a life, boof, just wanting to get out there.
Mm.
But they're totally dependent on a parent to guide them into adulthood. They cannot bring themselves up.
But before we come back, that is some tough stuff for all of us to hear, I think. Catherine, I want to bring you in there. And some of the sentiments that Doc Resnick has expressed there is, What do you feel? I mean, five is a serious, it's a serious thing, right? Is what do you feel about what you may have been raised as versus what you expect of yourself now and what the world expects of you as a mother today? I'd be really interested to hear because you've had time to practice with a few.
Yes. One thing I can definitely agree with. I grew up in the 80s and 90s, giving away my age a bit here. We're conservative. My parents were civil servants, so we're talking good old-fashioned parenting styles. I have a different view on parenting now. You know, for example, corporal punishment versus non-corporal punishment. You know, a lot of views have changed over time. So I do agree that parenting has changed, and I do agree that in many ways, modern parenting has become a little bit of a religion in the way that people obsess about parenting styles and how you're parenting and what you're doing, you know, to the extent where you can't give your kid a lollipop in public, you know, unless it's like a Woolies fruit juice-based lollipop, you know, and that sort of thing. And people are a lot more nervous about things like letting their 10-year-old walk up to the shop on their own to go and buy something, which is the kind of freedom that I believe Dr. Resnick is talking about when it comes to the fact that kids are a lot tougher and need to be given the opportunity to explore that. So I do completely agree with that. I am a little skeptical about the assertion that you don't get COIS and ADHD children or something like that, mainly because obviously they also don't have pediatric psychiatry and all of those things going on. I do feel it's there are definitely cases. I worry a little bit that you've got the two ends of the spectrum where you've got people who are over-medicating and they're hoping that the medical fraternity will take over parts of parenting that they're too lazy or unable to.
Yes. Manage. Yes.
Or they mollycoddle their kids, like Dr. Resnick is saying, and what they end up with is basically spoiled brats, and then they hope that that can somehow be fixed with medication. But I do believe you get the other end of the spectrum where you get kids with real problems, real concentration issues. And if a bit of medication can help them concentrate for long enough in the mornings in class to master arithmetic and basic maths and just get them through that initial phase, just so that they can get the ball rolling, that's a different thing. So yeah, that's all I want to say there. I was going to say all, and then I just went on a whole rant. Sorry.
No, you've let us know. And Lebang, I'll let you come in, I think, on something you are particularly interested in, sort of the different parenting styles. And you can go ahead and shoot at Dr. Resnick.
Yeah, so I've actually finished reading Parenting Decoded, Dr. Resnick. And I just want to say, like, being that upfront is very scary because not a lot of mothers are ready to hear this. We're not ready to hear that we're coddling our kids. We're not ready to hear that we're doing too much. Because if I don't do it, then who's going to do it? You know, am I just going to let my kid out into the world to go and learn things from the street and figure things out for themselves? It's a very, very scary thought, and it's a scary reality. But when I, you know, read and realized that some of these things are just small things that you need to apply, it actually helps. So I tried it with my kid last night. He kind of had a little bit of a moment because he's going back to school today, blah, 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 blah. Schools are opening. And he's like, Mom, I want to sleep at this time. I want to wake up at this time. And therefore, I'm not going to eat supper right now. I'm like, okay, so you're not eating. Are you sure? He's like, let me just go to bed. He wants to go to school. And I think that's fine because we come from a time where we didn't want to go to school. We've made it past that. And now he's keen because I showed him his reports. And he did well. So now he's excited for school. But he's not realizing that if you don't eat, dude, like, how are you going to wake up in the morning? Anyway, I let him. He goes. So he's awake now, and now he's like, yeah, no, he's feeling a bit hungry, so before he does his bed and before he washes, can he eat breakfast? I'm like, buddy, it just doesn't work like that. You can't make these decisions. So it's really in the little things that I can say some of these methods do work, Dr. Izzy, but at the same time, again, mothers aren't just going to read this and be like, oh, these are the answers. This is exactly what I need to do. Because it is that internal conflict of, can I let my child just go out into the world? So how do we find that balance as mothers? Like, if there's a birthday party next door, I'm kind of okay with having my son near me everywhere I can see him the whole time. I'm not just going to let him wander off. I don't know what kind of food they're serving here. I don't know. It's that out of my control. So how do I find that balance of, go out there and learn, young man, and stay here and be with mommy, young man.
And Dr. Resnick, before you take that, sorry, I just want to add in so that you can just answer this all in one fell swoop. I want to bring in a little bit of how I was raised, and I'm so delighted it went the way it went, was that the more I encounter parents and people, and one thing people always ask me is, should I send my kids to boarding school more and more? And I have my own answer for that is, the advice I always give, and I'm a terrible person to give advice because I'm not an empath, I go, be hard on your kids because you're all they know. So just be hard on your kids. Don't worry about it. But I'm not a parent, so it's easy for me to say because my parents were extremely hard on me, and I'm so delighted because I can kind of defend myself now. So I'd love to know, as you answer Levang's question, what you think of being, just be hard on your kids. Or not. So hopefully you can wrap that answer up to what Levan was asking.
Being hard, that's not the word. It's what we have to do. Remember, kids have to take on life. There's lots they can do. So the more we do for them, the more helpless we make them. What we're not doing and what's creeping in, a lot of new labels, anxiety disorders, incapriceness, sleeping in parents' bed. Nobody's helping parents understand that. What we do have to understand that everything a child does is a choice. Not having manners is a choice. Like, for instance, there's an impulsivity disorder. Every child is born impulsive. How do we stop that? Kids don't go and say, "Mom, please may I use your cell phone?" They grab the cell phone. They just go and say, "Mom, I want your cell phone. Mom, I want this." So they, the impulsivity which they should be growing out of is totally up to the parent. So you've got to stop them and say, "Well, that's my cell phone. What do you have to say? Please, Mom, may I use your phone?" It slows them down. It stops them. Then you give them a phone. But if you're just giving them things, or they're just taking things, that impulsivity stays there. And you remember, children are only about themselves. Only abuse affects children. Sexual, physical, emotional, verbal. That affects kids. They can handle a little disappointment in the playground and survive. And you must remember, kids have to learn to socialize as well. It's very important. So the trend today is to overprotect our kids, not to let them play. By overprotecting kids, we're making all the decisions for them. When we make all the decisions for the kids, they grow up indecisive. And it's become a big problem. You can see the trend that kids are growing up with a sense of entitlement. They don't know how to keep themselves occupied. You'll have a three-year-old say they're bored. It was unheard of in our day. How can a child be bored?
Sure.
Now, those are already dangerous signs. And if you don't mind me giving you a good example, the moment that most times I've been to, they're a million toys. But kids play with their toys for 2 minutes. They're supposed to use their imagination. They're supposed to use create imaginary games. I've got a friend with a six-year-old, got a beautiful doll's house. She doesn't know what to do with it. It looks nice.
Yeah.
She's got no idea how to fantasize, have imaginary friends. So there are little things that are creeping in that we're not noticing. And a kid growing up without using their imagination, being creative, aren't going to be creative. And we're doing these little things without noticing. I'd like to make one more comment.
Sure.
What's tending to happen today is that with COVID and with everything, a lot of kids have stayed at home. A lot of them are going back to school because they have to rather than they want to. And at home, you know, they've got on their parents' nerves. A lot of them have just been put in front of the TV. So by going to school because they don't want to, they don't be giving the message that you don't have to learn. Because when they come home, somebody's helping them. Mommy will help you. The au pair will help you. Somebody will help you. So we're giving them a little tacit message. They don't worry about studying because somebody's going to help you. So we're encouraging a sort of a helplessness with kids, where they're leaving it to us to help them. Now, that is creating a sort of a helplessness. But one of the key concerns is that the key to success in life is grit and determination. That is parenting. Are we instilling grit in our children, where they stick something through, where they're tending to only do what they want to do? The moment it's a bit of a challenge, "Mommy, I can't. Please help me." So we actually, without realizing it, we're allowing kids to opt out. We are allowing kids to lack that grit. So you've got a huge number of kids from observation not achieving to their potential. Parents are giving the message to help their kids. You shouldn't help the kids. The kids have to try first, then you see. For instance, they got reading. They've got to practice their reading. If they make more than two mistakes when they're reading to you, you've got to say to them, "I see you haven't practiced enough." Means you want to go and practice harder.
Yeah.
But when they read to you, they've got to read at their best. And if I use maths as an example, and the child comes home and they haven't got their first two math sums right, and they say, "Mommy, I can't do my maths," and the mom helps them, they haven't listened in class. So what a parent should say, "Okay, tomorrow you're going to speak to the maths teacher. Tell the maths teacher you couldn't understand your work."
Yeah.
"And learn from the maths teacher because I'm not going to teach you."
Wow.
So we're not doing those little things.
Yeah.
We're giving that message of opting out.
So, Dr. Resnick, I love that. And Catherine, I want to give you the last word because we need to wrap up, and we can carry on with Levang on the other side. Just some of your thoughts. I could see your face and some of the things Dr. Resnick making your face. If you're not watching on YouTube, Catherine looked like she wanted to jump through the screen and break Dr. Resnick's glasses.
She's
crazy. Yeah, no. So I'll give you the last word on what Dr. Resnick has said, and Dr. Resnick, I'll let you finish off. Obviously, you've got the workshop coming up. I'll let you finish off with that. So, Catherine, go ahead. The last word to you.
I do believe, you know, one of the premises of the whole Montessori schooling system, for example, which I always loved, was never do for a child what they can do for themselves. And it's basically like when you've got a grown-ass six-year-old who's coming and asking you to make them a sandwich.
Yeah.
And you know they can make themselves a sandwich. You know, they just want you to do it for them. You know, that sort of thing. So I 100% agree on the fact that, and, you know, very often parents just do it because it's easier and faster. So you know your kid is capable of vacuuming or doing these things, but also you don't have 4 hours to watch them slowly plug it in and do the painful thing. So in many ways, as parents, I think we learn, and I had to learn this the hard way, especially with small children. You have to be patient. You have to be patient with the fact that when they do things themselves, they're going to be rubbish at it, and you're just going to have to sit aside and allow that to happen. I do feel, though, that, you know, we know more now than ever about the educational process. I'm speaking specifically initially in, you know, the foundation is where there are kids that battle and they can't keep up, but they try and fake it. I have a daughter who was battling to pick up reading. She was battling with it. And what she would do is she would memorize them reading the reader in class and then just say it by rote and pretend that she was reading, which is in itself kind of flippin' amazing. But at the same time, we would not have picked that up. And now we do spend extra time with her. And, you know, and I've realized that that is something that would probably not have been picked up, or there wouldn't have been that kind of knowledge about it in my day at all. That my daughter would have just had to hobble along. So I do feel that we should be aware of that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I live in the future.
Catherine, I'm glad for you too. And listen, good luck finding technical assistance to sort of help you as the crew grows there, because obviously you're trying to get two rugby teams to play against each other in your house at this rate. So congratulations and shout out to you. And I jest, of course. It's an awesome thing. Being a parent is, wow. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. So, Catherine, thanks for your time today. And Dr. Resnick, with your workshop that's coming up, tell us where we can find it, where parents can reach out if they need to and get a hold of you.
I think if you ever look at my website, it's www.smartchoiceparenting.co.za. And the workshop is 3 to 4 hours. If there are teenagers or very difficult kids, I see only the parents, but I have one extra session where I mediate to get the structures, to negotiate the structures with the kids. And the program is very different to others in that it works. If parents are prepared to take on the responsibility, have amazing success with stuff like children sleeping in your bed, you know, children not wanting to eat their supper, not wanting to get dressed, not even wanting to brush teeth. We can help parents understand how to talk to kids so that you're not nagging, you're not screaming. How to understand to make it the child's problem. The key is to make it the child's problem. The moment a parent gets upset, we've gone. There's no real respect. So we've got to know how to manage a child by staying calm and by making it the child's problem. Like, for instance, I'll give you a good example. I brought up 3 stepdaughters. The rule with TV, if they wanted to delete a program that I'd recorded, they had to ask me. If they didn't, it meant that they were saying to me they don't want to watch TV for me. So Erica came home one day and I said to her, X, I don't believe you don't want to watch TV. She said, why? I said, well, you deleted the movie. She accepted it. But 3 days later, she came to me and she said to me, Ken, when can I watch TV again? I said, X, I wanted you to watch during all the agreed time. But when you deleted that movie, you said to me you don't want to watch it for a week. So it's a week. She accepted it. There wasn't another word, and that was it. And so the whole idea is how to talk to kids, negotiate with them, make them understand, because you've got to preempt. Let them understand the consequences. Mm. So when they take the consequence, they understand they chose it, you're not punishing them. So you get rid of the word punishment. You get them to own the problem. It works absolutely brilliantly across everything, from not eating their food, not going to school, not brushing their teeth. I've got a very cute thing when they don't want to brush their teeth, etc., etc. So the whole idea is to give parents the tools to stay calm, because the moment we lose it, we're gone.
That's it. I think that's a great message. The moment we lose it. Dr. Ken Resnick, an absolute honor and a privilege, and I'm sure it's not the last time you'll be with us. So, wow. So some hard truths, and looking forward to reading the book. Should we quickly punt the book? What is it called, and where can I buy it?
Yes. It's called Parenting Decoder, and at the moment you can get it through my website as well.
Okay.
Delivered by courier.
Yeah, that's it. It's right. 2021.
Thank you.
Ken Resnick, thank you so much.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
All righty. Yes. Cool.
Ciao.
Cheers. All right, we're going to take a little break, and that's real stuff. Lebang, we'll carry on the other side. I'm sure you've got plenty to say and unpack from that. We're going to go to a little break, and we will be back just after this. CliffCentral.com.